Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Feels like I just walked into the club. Who's that, Chris? That's good stuff.
It's a local band, Hembree.
Okay.
Really good. I try to feature them just because I like them getting exposure, you know? Got to support your local music groups.
It's called Hembree?
Hembree.
Hembree.
Yes.
Okay. I think we've had them on the show before.
Yep.
Good stuff. You guys from Hembree, awesome stuff. This is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. We've had a good show rolling so far. Hour number one, we spoke with Seth Kizer from The Athletic. Does video analysis of the Kansas City Chiefs. Looking forward to training camp. If you missed that, you can get it on the podcast at 810WHB.com. Hour number two, we had a nice visit with Max Reaper from RoyalsReview.com. First time we've had on the show. Getting excited about Bubba Starling, who made his Major League debut Friday night, Kauffman Stadium. His first plate appearance, drew a walk, and then scored on a throwing error later in the inning. So was on the bases, moving around, scoring runs. Did strike out and had a couple of groundouts, but that's okay. We also talked with Max about, you know, the second half of the season and what to expect at the trade deadline or trade possibilities. So good stuff. And if you missed Max Reaper, you can go get the podcast at 810WHB.com. Right now for hour number three, we're going to kick it off with Matt Galloway from CJ Online and HawkZone.com. Matt, how are you on this Saturday afternoon?
I'm good. Just getting some laundry done and getting ready for the drive down to Dallas tomorrow for Big 12 Media Days.
Big 12 Media Days. Let's start right into that. It was interesting. I was hearing some discussion this morning on another show, a national show, and they had somebody on to talk about the Big 12. And maybe this shouldn't bother me. I just found it interesting. Only two of the 10 Big 12 teams are bringing a quarterback to Media Days. Now, Matt, you've been covering this long enough. When you go to media days, there's not a lot of excitement, but you're getting your work done. You want to hear from the head coaches. And for me, I want to hear from the quarterback. And only two teams are taking quarterbacks. I found that kind of head-scratching.
Yeah, I guess in that regard, David Beatty was kind of ahead of the game in the fact that he waited until, maybe even the day of the season opener so many times,
right,
in his tenure to name a starting quarterback. I think so many teams are buying into that, you know, earn it type of mentality where even where you have, when you have a guy at certain schools where it seems like totally obvious in a layup that he would be their starting quarterback, they're still going to go through the facade, I guess, maybe even a charade of having a quarterback competition so that they can make the guy earn it. When you do that, you open yourself up, obviously, to someone having a terrible fall camp and someone having a great fall camp, and then you're in the awkward position of maybe having to give your starting quarterback job to somebody who you think isn't the best choice for that long term. But yeah, I'm with you. Obviously the quarterback is the most important position and you always prefer to talk to them at these events. But I think the coaches are just deciding to bring guys that in a lot of regards are just going to kind of, you know, be the ones that are, you know, not surprised. It's not surprising that they're going to start and play big roles. And in order to avoid any kind of conflict, you know, I believe it was maybe last year or the year before, K-State brought both of their quarterbacks that were in the competition,
right,
Skylar Thompson, and I'm drawing a blank on the other individual who's transferred since then, but that kind of was a little bit awkward, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I was there and talking to both of them, and they handled it really well, but, I mean, 90% of their questions were about the quarterback competition, so maybe this is just a way to kind of get around that, but I would like for the Big 12, it'd be nice if they were to step in and say, you know, hey, you got to bring a quarterback. So
right,
I know that'll never happen, but that would be interesting.
Well, Clemson didn't take Trevor Lawrence to the ACC media days, which is, I mean, if you're trying to mount the Heisman campaign, which every school does it if they've got a guy, it's a full-on PR blitz. That's a little bit weird to me, but for the Big 12, the only two schools bringing quarterbacks to the media days are K-State with Skylar Thompson and Texas with Sam Ehringer. And that, you know, Ehringer is going to be a Sam Ellinger. What did I say? Sam Mellinger? Herringer? Okay. So Sam Ellinger. Sam Ellinger, and you have to make sure you pause so you don't think it's Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star. So Skylar Thompson, I get, and I'm happy for him because I thought last year was unfair for him. They had one particular game where, you know, he was the starter, and then I know Bill Snyder likes to rotate guys sometimes, and then all of a sudden he's getting tapped on the shoulder saying, "You're out of the game." And Bill Snyder had unilaterally decided to change quarterbacks without telling his offensive coordinator. So Skylar Thompson doesn't know what to think. And look, I root for him because he's a Kansas City kid, Fort Osage kid. But I think he'll be on better footing this year. Sam Ellinger, obvious choice also as well. He could be a Heisman finalist. For Kansas, I get it, though. You're talking about Thomas McVitie, the kid they're bringing in that was supposed to be a fit with the offensive coordinator who then left a week later. You have incumbents like Carter Stanley. You got Billy Maples, who I like. I saw him play at Park Hill many times. He's a redshirt freshman. I don't think he'll be in the mix. And then you're getting a lot of traction from Miles Kendrick as well. So I totally see that for Les Miles being an open competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think whenever Thomas McVitie came in, it was kind of assumed that he would be the incumbent. The expected starter. I still expect him to end up getting the job. I think he's you know, 6'6", quarterback, pro style. One thing I'll say is that in the windows we got into their practices, and they were much more open than the previous administration, he struggled with his accuracy, and that's always been the knock on him since he came out of Pittsburgh, transferred to the JUCO level, had a very productive year there. And you know, Carter Stanley is another guy that you could argue kind of didn't really get a fair shake. Last year, I think against Oklahoma State, he had the best quarterback game of the David Beatty era. And after the game where they lost, all David Beatty said after taking two quarterback questions was, "I'm not going to talk about the quarterbacks anymore." If anything, that should have been the game where he stuck his chest out and talked about how great the quarterback play was and how Carter Stanley really took command. Instead, Carter Stanley got a token start at West Virginia where I believe his last play, there were 10 players on offense and he got blown up in the backfield. And that was almost like, well, you know, we gave him a shot and he just couldn't produce. Back to Peyton Bender. So just that constant juggling. If KU can just get any kind of stability out of the quarterback position, they're going to be leaps and bounds ahead of where they were during the David Beatty era, where there was so much uncertainty. And I believe the whole earn it thing kind of backfired because it seemed like guys were always looking over their shoulder. They were always paranoid. You know, even Peyton Bender, who got the last really leg of the season and uninterrupted. In the season opener last year, ahead of the last play for the team in overtime, he was pulled from a cold Miles Kendrick who came in.
Who had not played in like three quarters, right?
Right. So that was completely baffling. And you could argue that, Peyton Bender didn't get a fair shake in that situation to really have something to build on and confidence in what was ending up a season opening loss to Nicholls State. So if they can just get some stability and just get a consistent message with their quarterbacks, I think this KU team is going to be just so far ahead of where past KU teams have been.
We're speaking with Matt Galloway from CJOnline.com and HawkZone.com. You can follow him on Twitter at TheMattGalloway. I was trying to say gallery. Galloway. You got a photo gallery on there, maybe? Check that out.
Maybe some.
Okay. Let me stick with the quarterbacks for just a couple of more questions. I totally agree with you on David Beatty because his staff came down on myself and Tim Grunhardt a couple of years ago when Grunny got a tip on who the starting quarterback was not going to be, and we announced it on a pregame show, and they were not happy because they were going to lose their strategic advantage, which was crap. But the one thing, the vibe I get from Les Miles is, okay, David Beatty was not cut out to be a head coach. That's not his thing because there's so many things you have to do other than your position or your side of the ball. It was not his thing, and he wasn't good at the end, especially with the media. He was not particularly great with the fans. But the thing about Les Miles is he is what I would call a, quote, professional. He knows how to be a head football coach at the highest level of college football. And you're not going to have this, this circus of a quarterback situation. If you want to change quarterbacks throughout the course of a game, that's fine. You're not going to see the constant in and out and in and out and, this guy played well, but he's not starting the next game. Or this guy played bad, and we're going to yank him right. I just don't think we're going to see that with Les Miles.
No, I don't either. And when you talk, I mean, not to beat a dead horse here, but when you look back at the last era, Montel Cozart went to Boise State, had a really, really productive year when utilized correctly.
And he got a bowl ring.
Yeah, and now he's in the CFL, I believe. Ryan Willis went to Virginia Tech. He's still there, had a pretty productive year, just performing better than he did at KU, another Kansas City kid. So, you know, it began to really take the picture of it was a system issue and not a talent issue. And I think that this year you're not going to have that issue. I know there are some LSU fans that would probably be listening to this and hear our faith about Les Miles and his handling of quarterbacks and mm-hmm. his ability to teach quarterbacks and might have some pause about that. But everything that I've seen from how he's handled this, I mean, if this competition comes down to the week before the season opener or even the day of the season opener, I don't think it'll be because of some kind of ploy to get a decided, you know, schematic advantage over Indiana State. I think it'll be truly because Carter Stanley has pushed Thomas McVitie that much, or maybe somebody else has stepped in and surprised everyone. So I think that at this point, KU fans have nothing to doubt Les Miles' judgment here with the quarterbacks, and I believe that they should, you know, give him their trust until he proves otherwise.
All right, speaking with Matt Galloway, CJOnline.com, running back, we got the news last week that Puka Williams will have a one-game suspension, so not a big deal. And look, that's not going to affect. It's a non-conference game. It's not going to have a huge effect. But what is your gauge on the ability of Les Miles to handle this? And he's going to get some blowback from whether it's the fans or the supporters about bringing Puka Williams back. But what's your gut feeling about Les Miles and his ability to manage the situation and make sure that Puka Williams does what he's supposed to do?
You know, it's a tough question. I think the jury's still out. You know, this is the first crisis, and I don't think it's an exaggeration to call it a crisis, that Les Miles had to deal with since he took the job in November. This is unquestionably KU's best player. This is a player that could swing one, two, maybe even three games the other direction this upcoming season. He's that dynamic. He's the most electric player that I've ever seen on a football field at the college level live, and that was as a freshman. And you take all those things into account against the, you know, the heinous things that he was accused against, and you just have to wonder, you know, is it a situation where if this was the fourth string running back, would he have, you know, been given a similar punishment?
No.
Would he? Yeah. So that's a judgment that everyone has to make, and you have to look and wonder, you know, is it more than just a slap on the wrist? You know, they will point and say, hey, he's been suspended for 7 months, and that's true. But Puka Williams is not the kind of player that needs spring practice as much as everyone else. He's the kind of player that can improvise. Even if a play breaks down, he can, you know, change the game and shift the field and get a 47-yard touchdown run. So, you know, I'm not at a point yet where I can say whether or not Les Miles is in one direction or another handling these situations correctly. So I do think that Puka Williams, you know, it's a tricky situation because I myself, as you know, a journalist, have really been questioning the whole idea of second chances with the whole Tyreek Hill thing. So I guess it's just, you know, he's so new in his tenure at KU that I'm not sure exactly how I would answer that.
We're speaking with Matt Galloway, CJOnline.com, HawkZone.com, talking Kansas football. We'll get into basketball here in a minute. The other options at running back are okay. They're not great. I mean, Khalil Herbert, I've kind of liked him at times, but he's never been able to grab on and hold on to be a consistent starter. Dom Williams, he's okay for a couple of carries a game. So after Puka Williams, it drops off a little bit. I guess Herbert would be your next guy.
Yeah, and I really like KU's backfield. I think Khalil Herbert is the kind of guy that could start at a lot of different places across the country at the D1 level. And not to pile on again, but I think he's another guy that really got kind of a raw deal last year under the David Beatty era.
I would agree with you on that, yes.
He's a guy that said that he was healthy, but you look at some of his games against West Virginia, 6 carries for 46 yards, 8 carries for 39 yards against Texas Tech. He had 2 carries for 64 yards against Rutgers. I mean, what did this guy have to do to get more carries? And that was still whenever they were trying to, you know, break Puka Williams in, and they were trying to really be careful with Puka Williams and manage his workload, knowing that he's an undersized true freshman. So I think Khalil Herbert is the kind of guy that can carry a workload if utilized correctly. And Dom Williams has shown flashes. I'm not sure he's starting caliber, obviously, but I think he's the kind of guy that could, you know, bust a couple runs. So I think if this, you know, the big question mark is the offensive line. It's going to be kind of patchwork, and they're under a first-year offensive line coach at KU. So There's a lot of questions about how that effectiveness is going to either help or hurt the effectiveness of the running back core. But I think the strength of this offense will be the running game. And, you know, that to me, that goes beyond Puka Williams.
All right, Matt, you're going to have to start making predictions here before too long based on how the team shapes out. Do you have an idea in your mind, like an over-under number for a number of wins that not only what you think it will be, but maybe also what will determine what is successful in year one of the Les Miles era?
I think the answer for me is the same. I think three. I know that that is setting the bar kind of low, but I think he's inheriting a terrible situation from a scholarship standpoint. And I think you walk into this, and he said that he expects to win and win immediately. But I think you take any other coach in the Big 12 last year and you put them in charge of last year's KU team for a full year. And with the talent they had with Joe Dineen, Daniel Wise, other individuals, and I think if you give them a new head coach and that coach's staff, I think that that's a 5-win team. I think they might have even pushed the bowl eligibility. I mean, they had some close losses, some close calls that you just wonder about the coaching difference. I don't think that they'll have that issue with Les Miles unless he's, you know, a far different coach than he was a few years ago. I do think clock management might be an issue. I think that was an issue for him at LSU, but we'll see how that plays out. That, you know, when you really haven't had to worry about clock management issues at Kansas for about a decade, so that'll at least be a little bit of a refreshing issue, because that'll mean that they're in some games. So, you know, I think they have a couple layups in non-conference play. I think that they'll surprise someone in Big 12 play. I just can't, I mean, maybe it's bearish, but I can't peg them higher than three at this point.
Well, you mentioned the scholarship disaster that Les Miles inherited. We were talking with another KU reporter, probably 3 weeks ago, and he said, you know what, last year at this time, we didn't have any work to do because David Beatty had signed one guy, and Les Miles is over 20 now, so there's actually work to do because David Beatty wasn't getting the job done.
Yeah, the pendulum has definitely swung in the other direction, and, you know, to be fair to David Beatty, he entered that kind of as a lame duck. He had a new athletic director, and the writing was kind of on the wall. He was going to have to, in my opinion, qualify for a bowl game to keep his job. That obviously didn't happen. As a recruit, it's tough to commit to KU there. I think Les Miles and his staff did a terrific job in the short window that they had to salvage that recruiting class. Now the pendulum, as I said, is kind of swung in the other direction, and I don't think that they'll finish ahead of Texas in the recruiting rankings as some sites have them at now. That's just simply because Texas is taking more of a wait-and-see approach on some of these kids. KU, they're getting out ahead of the game, and obviously verbal commitments aren't binding, but I see absolutely no problem with saying, hey, you know what, commit to us right now before, you know, some of the issues of the season might crop up and the win-loss record. And I think it's a very smart play for Les Miles and KU to go out and really scoop up a lot of these three-star recruits. I'm always hesitant with recruiting because, you know, sometimes it doesn't stick. But if nothing else, it's a starting point, and I think it's a great starting point for this first real robust class under Les Miles.
All right, we're visiting with Matt Galloway, cjonline.com, hawkzone.com, covers all things Kansas athletics. All right, let's flip it over to basketball, Matt. And a couple of KU players are having pretty good summer camps in the NBA. I believe I've seen Devontae Graham post a bunch of pictures and videos, but you noted last night, or I guess retweeted last night, Malik Newman playing for the Cavaliers Summer League team, 33 points on 11 of 17 shooting. Look, Matt, I know this isn't Summer League, but for Malik Newman, a guy still trying to get some traction at the next level, that's pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah. Little Debbie's favorite son, Malik Newman. Malik Newman is probably right there with Dedrick Lawson among my favorite players that I've ever covered. Always honest. And then he really came on strong there at the end. I mean, for 2 weeks in March and April, he was the best player in the country. So, you know, he's had some issues at the NBA level in terms of just sticking on teams. I believe, you know, signing with the Lakers on that two-way contract. You know, you never know when you do it, but it ended up being a mistake, obviously, with the way that the Lakers were trying to win and win immediately with LeBron. We kind of saw that with Speed. Speed ended up being a casualty, traded to Detroit, you know, for a player that the Lakers felt could help them win immediately and make it to the playoffs. That obviously didn't happen. They got incredibly worse after that trade. But, I would say Malik Newman, 33 points on 11 for 17. And, it doesn't matter to me that it's a summer league. I think that's enough to get the attention of a team, especially like the Cavs. That's the perfect fit for him. A team that can take a flyer on some guys. I mean, we saw it last year with the Cavs with Billy Preston. I think that this is a perfect fit for him, and hopefully he keeps his conditioning up and he can keep up at this pace. But he's definitely caught some eyes, and I would say also Svi Mykhailiuk, another guy that's really shined in the summer league for Detroit, and that entire class, along with Devontae Graham, has caught some eyes this summer, and maybe with Kimba Walker gone, Devontae will get more of a chance in Charlotte.
And with Mykhailiuk, I'm trying to go back in my memory bank. He was drafted by the Lakers, right?
Right.
And then so now he's with the Pistons?
Yeah, he was traded for the traded to the Pistons around the trade deadline for I believe Reggie Bullock.
Okay.
And that was an attempt by the Lakers just to get someone who they thought could help them in their playoff push, and it backfired. So, I think if you ask the Lakers now, they would, especially given that he was on a second round contract, they would much rather have a guy like Svi, who is one of those minimum deals that can really fill out a roster for some of these super teams.
And for Svi Mykhailiuk, for me, in this era of the NBA, he's a perfect player for almost any team. I know you have off-night shooting in the NBA, but man alive, when it goes up, I'm pretty confident he's going to make that 40 to 45%, maybe 40% of the time at least.
Yeah, he's a guy that you can just put in the corner and have him come in and just be a 3-and-D guy. And if you would have told KU fans, that Svi as a freshman or a sophomore, or even a junior, would, go to the NBA level and be a candidate to be a 3-and-D guy, that second part might have made people scratch their heads a little bit. But he really got better on defense as a senior, and I think that he's only carried that over. He's never going to be able to, make up for some of the deficiencies he has, like his wingspan. But I think that he's turned into really kind of a solid defender at the NBA level. And you look at it and you have to just wonder how much of an opportunity he's going to get. I think he's going to get more of an opportunity at a place like Detroit than he would in LA, where he's just sitting on the end of a bench and, LeBron might not even know his name. So I think I think all three of these guys from that class, Malik Newman, Svi Mykhailiuk, and Devontae Graham, they're where they're at right now is good for them in terms of the location. And if they can just stick, especially Malik after the summer league, I think that they'll be poised to at least have a kind of a moonshot chance at turning some heads in next year's season.
I have to admit, I was a little bit surprised last week or the week before when the Sacramento Kings cut Frank Mason. Look, Frank's not going to be a 30 points a night guy in the NBA. That's fine. But the Kings don't seem to me to be a team that can afford cutting a guy that works that hard and has that kind of leadership skills.
Yeah, Sacramento, it's kind of been where star KU players' careers have gone to die.
Yes.
If you talk to KU fans, that's the last place that any of them want KU players to be drafted to at this point. Thomas Robinson, yeah. And then Ben McLemore, too. So, I think that this, obviously you'd love to have a guaranteed contract if you're Frank Mason, but it's kind of a fresh start for him. His minutes went way down in his second season, and, he was never going to usurp De'Aaron Fox. I think that De'Aaron Fox has really emerged as a star for Sacramento, and they made some acquisitions this offseason to kind of really shore up the guard position. The writing was a little bit on the wall for him there, but I think that he'll have an opportunity to go somewhere. And, he's honestly the best college basketball player I've ever seen. So I know the height has always been an issue and it's always been an obstacle for him, but I can't believe that there's not a place for him on some NBA roster next year playing, 10, 15 minutes a game as a backup point guard. I guess I don't know the NBA as much as a lot of folks that follow it religiously, and maybe that's just a byproduct of growing up in the Kansas City area without a team. But
right.
Frank Mason just seems like he just seems like a baller, and then I have a hard time believing that there's not a place in some NBA roster for him.
Well, I always hold up the example. I'm going to ask you one more question after this about the team back on campus. But I always hold up this as an example, and people are, if you've listened regularly, you're probably sick of me talking about it. But Shaq Harrison, who's a Kansas City kid. Lee Summit West played college ball down at Tulsa, was with the Phoenix Suns. He was in the G League, still want to call it D League. He was in the G League for a year and a half, a couple of years. Gets called up on a 10-day contract. Gets another 10-day contract. Then they decide, okay, we'll sign you for a couple of years. They go to the next year's training camp. He's going to be the starting guard. Then they sign one or two other guys, and then at the end of camp, he gets whacked. So then he gets signed by the Chicago Bulls, and he played, I believe, in 76 games last year. He's going to stick with the Bulls. Sometimes it works out. You just get a different go to a different place, get a different coach, get a different system, and it works out for you.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times the measurables that you get at the combine, they're more important than, you know, what you did for your entire collegiate career. Look at a guy like Cheick Diallo, a complete nothing at the college level. He's carved out a pretty good NBA career for himself, and that's because I believe he was given so many chances to really get on the court because of his size and his pedigree. A guy like Frank Mason, he didn't even have that pedigree coming out of high school. So it's been an uphill battle for him, but I think he's got the tools to have that kind of a similar renaissance at a second place.
We're speaking with Matt Galloway, cjonline.com, hawkzone.com as well. There's really not a lot going on back in Lawrence in terms of the basketball team, but the schedule announcements keep slipping out, it seems like, once a week, once every other week. And the bracket for the and Matt, I laugh whenever I read the name of this tournament because it repeats the same word twice. You have the Maui Jim Maui Invitational. Now, I get it. Jim Maui is the company, but the city of Maui doesn't want to lose their name in the title, so the Maui Jim Maui Invitational. If I had to work that tournament, I would stumble over that every single time.
Oh, yeah, and I probably will. I guess it's kind of like Kansas City, Kansas for outsiders.
Yes, right. Why do we have the same name twice? But So the brackets come out for this, and KU is going to play Chaminade, which is the host school there in Maui. But there's a potential championship matchup against Michigan State, and that would be absolutely huge. This has always been one of my favorite tournaments. Actually, any tournament in Hawaii because of all the scenery they show you during the games. But that could be huge to get this season kickstarted for either one of those schools.
Yeah, and I think KU definitely pulled the better side of that bracket. I mean, now that I say that, Chaminade is going to upset KU in the first round of it. But no, I think that everybody watching, it's going to be, I believe Duke and Gonzaga was the collision course last year in that event, and they ended up having a fantastic championship game. And I think that it's that case again with Michigan State and Kansas. I think that they're, you know, I expect them to be the one and two teams in the country, respectively. You know, certain early, way too early polls already have that written down. And I just think that in that setting, that would be absolutely incredible. And that even, you know, looks past the fact that KU plays Duke at in Madison Square Garden this year in the Champions Classic. The Champions Classic, to me, has been really the kind of rock of KU's season. It always gives them an early opportunity against another blue blood. And here recently, KU's fared pretty well in those opportunities. And so you're talking about two major, major high-profile games before conference play, and that doesn't even go into the fact that KU's probably, you know, for some fans, the most emotional game is going to be against Villanova in Pennsylvania. So just given that Villanova's really kind of stuck it to KU in a couple of the recent postseasons. So it's going to be an incredible non-conference season for KU, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. And then you've got the Big 12 SEC Challenge right there in the middle of January. So KU could very well be playing all three opponents that they regularly play in the Champions Classic next season alone.
And with Duke and Kansas at Madison Square Garden, that will be eminently more entertaining than the team that normally occupies Madison Square Garden that can't get anybody to play for them.
No, I remember, I believe it was Frank Mason's senior year, he hit the walk-off shot against Duke at MSG, and just that whole experience for me was a pretty incredible event to cover, and that was the real kickstart to his National Player of the Year campaign. So we'll see if that happens again this year. We'll see if somebody can step up and really capture the attention on a national stage again.
I had a guy I used to work with. He and his family took a trip to New York City, and one of the things they wanted to do was go to an NBA game, and so he was looking up online Knicks tickets. And, like, upper deck nosebleeds are, like, $90 to $100. And he's like, for this? to watch that garbage?
You're much better off just going over to Brooklyn at this point.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, Matt, final thing, and it's non-basketball related. I asked my last guest, and I'll ask you. I don't know if you've ever played tennis in your life. But last night on Twitter, this tweet started to float around, a ridiculous tweet. They took a poll, and 1 in 8 men, 12% of men think they could score a point on the tennis court against Serena Williams. Now, for me, no chance. The only way I'm even returning a serve is if I'm crouched down holding the racket in a purely defensive position and it deflects back to her. That's it. I'm not scoring a point, but do you think you could score a point on Serena Williams?
No. So, oddly enough, I actually do like tennis. I took a tennis class at Johnson County Community College to kind of satisfy my athletic eligibility that I needed for my credit there in that regard before I transferred over to KU. But, yeah, the answer is no. The answer is a big fat no. And even if I were even a modicum of an athlete, which I'm not, the answer would probably still be no.
No. I would like to meet some of this 12% of men who think they could do that and tell them, you're absolutely wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's the height of arrogance, I think.
Yes, it is. All right, hey, Matt, we're coming up on a break here. I appreciate you taking the time to join us on this Saturday. Try to find a place to stay cool today and tomorrow, and then we'll get back at it.
Will do. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. That is Matt Galloway, CJOnline.com, HawkZone.com, and you can give him a follow on Twitter at the Matt Galloway. And I'm guessing, I should have asked him, but I'm guessing the is on there because when I search, if you search Matt Galloway on Twitter, there's like 57.
I'm sure that it's very common.
Yes. That's why I have a middle initial in my Twitter handle, at Brad K. Porter. I was surprised that there were other Brad Porters, but whatever. You can follow Chris Bolig at Chris_Bolig, 2 L's, 1 G.
Or Craig Bolins.
Or Craig Bolins, as the emails that circulate.
Chris Bolins.
The emails that circulate through the building changed your name.
Yeah, so
it's Chris Bolins now.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. All right. As long as the check clears, it's all right.
True.
On that note, we will take a quick timeout as we head to the final half hour of our show. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolins is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Another good track. That's a good one. Who is this? I'm going to be embarrassed when I hear it, right? No?
It's Inky Biss.
Oh, okay.
Pardon Me. Yep.
Not their biggest song, but that's a solid band right there.
It's a good song.
Incubus like was good. We just wrapped up with Matt Galloway from CJOnline.com talking KU football and basketball. Football will be getting started here in a couple of weeks. And then they'll get the season rolling. If you missed any of that conversation with Matt Galloway, we talked basketball as well. You can find it on the podcast at 810WHB.com. We also visited with Max Reaper early in the show. Max with Royals Review. He's the editor-in-chief. Talking Bubba Starling, Major League debut. Talking second half. Talking potential trades that we could be looking at. So if you missed Max Reaper talking Royals, you can find that on the podcast page, 810WHB.com. And then we began the show with Seth Kaiser from The Athletic, talking Chiefs. He's does a lot of good video analysis. Talk about training camp coming up and some of the things he's got. He's got a 10-part series he just started. I think he said Football 101, I believe is what it's called. But he's looking at things that you could potentially see the Chiefs doing this season, either to build on what they did last year or new wrinkles they could add to it. So Seth is really good at that kind of stuff. So if you miss Seth Kaiser from The Athletic, you can get it on the podcast page, 810WHB.com. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show, about 20 minutes left in the show. And wanted to hit NBA real quick.
Oh, yeah. How can you not?
You have to. It's mandatory. I know we don't have a team here. We all would like, a lot of us would like one. Jarrett Sutton, get on it. If you're listening, Jarrett Sutton, get on it.
GM.
By the way.
He's your GM.
Jarrett Sutton was, I think he was in some NBA meetings yesterday. Sounded like maybe it was a conference call. And he said every time they talk about the league, they talk about expansion. Adam Silver, the commissioner, says it's going to happen. So could Kansas City be on that list? I mean, somewhere on that list, yes. But the most popular two cities that come up in the discussion are Seattle, because they lost the Supersonics to Oklahoma City because the city wouldn't build them a new arena. It's not
but
because
they're still having trouble with that.
Yes.
And getting a new arena, even without an NBA team, just to have something new.
Do you know how politics works in Seattle?
I mean, I'm not from there, so
no.
Not,
I know,
sure.
I know people who live there.
So
the political landscape in Seattle is not inclined to hand over money to build an arena, which is fine. I get it, but that's just not how the Seattle government works.
Well, and the Seahawks dominate that town. Like, if it's something for the Seahawks,
yes,
it will get done.
Yeah. And the Sounders share that with the Seahawks. They share the facility, and they're popular.
Mm-hmm.
But and they're going to have the NHL coming up. But getting a basketball franchise, I don't know. Las Vegas is the other one, along with Seattle, which you can totally see every professional sports league in America now doing, since the NHL was the first up saying, yeah, okay, we'll go to Vegas. We'll put the Knights there. Sure. And then the NFL swoops in right behind with the Raiders. I don't know if you played Major League Baseball in Las Vegas, it would have to be an enclosed.
Yeah, you'd have to have a
retractable.
Retractable roof, yes.
Yeah, because it's 190 degrees.
In like March and April, or like late March, there's only a few games in March, but in April, it would be super nice.
Mm-hmm.
You could just leave the roof open, and once the sun starts to set, it'll be in that 60 degree range. It'd be so nice.
Maybe they could take the Tampa Bay Rays and put them in Las Vegas.
Tampa Bay Rays are really fighting for that stay in Tampa. I mean, all those 20,000 people that are going to their games for
it's not even that. It's like 9,000.
I think it started to amp up a little just because they're so good this year.
Well, they're not going to move the Marlins because that stadium's not that old and Derek Jeter's in charge. So I don't think they're going to.
The Marlins should just not.
They should not exist.
They shouldn't exist.
No, they should have shut that down. When they sold the team the last time, the commissioner should have stepped in and said, no, we're shutting this down.
In my opinion, I don't think there should be, other than the NFL, I don't really think there should be franchises in Florida.
Yeah, the Miami Heat had a
yeah, but that was
runs.
For a two-year period because they had LeBron and D-Wade.
And
but
the
I don't
Magic
think that,
haven't been relevant since, what, Shaq?
No, when they went to the finals with Jameer Nelson and Dwight Howard.
It's been a while.
But maybe NBA, but no baseball, no professional baseball.
No, baseball should not be played
in Florida.
No, not at all. Not at all. So I start out with, hey, NBA news. So when the Lakers made the trade for Anthony Davis, LeBron James said, I'll give up number 23 since that's the number Davis was wearing in New Orleans. Yeah, I'll give up 23. That's fine. Good with that. He can have it. I'm going to switch back to number 6. Well, a problem. So Nike, which makes the jerseys, has a March 15th deadline for jersey changes, you know, because they got to get stuff printed. They got to get stuff on the shelves. They got to start selling merchandise. Well, that request was not put in by the March 15th deadline. The NBA said, okay, we're fine with it if Nike will give. Nike said no, because it would be, it says they would lose tens of millions of dollars on the inventory that they already have for LeBron's number, and I don't know if they had Anthony Davis's new number yet, but they would lose money. So Davis says he's going to wear number 3. That was his grade school number until maybe next year they trade it out. So got to check with Nike first. If there's one entity that can say no to LeBron, it's Nike. So can't trade the jerseys. A couple of other things here. Just kind of some fun things before we wrap up the show. Birthdays today. There are several sports-related birthdays today. I always look at this on that 80s old school Twitter account. So Harrison Ford is 77 today. Terrific actor, terrible pilot. Should probably not be flying his private jet anymore, his private airplane. Cameron Crowe is 62, famous movie director. Listen to the movies Cameron Crowe's been involved with over his career. Almost Famous, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. Jerry Maguire. Say Anything with John Cusack. Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Singles.
Oh, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I love that movie.
Tasty Waves and some Cool Buds.
Yes.
Spicoli, one of the great characters of all time. Everybody in that movie was
young
just...
Young Sean Penn.
Yes.
Love it.
Very young Sean Penn. Judge Reinhold kind of launched his career. Phoebe Cates, obviously. He also did, Cameron Crowe did a couple of duds too. We Bought a Zoo and Aloha. I never really heard anything good about those movies, but Cameron Crowe's 62. Patrick Stewart, the captain on the Starship Enterprise for Star Trek The Next Generation, Captain Picard, is 79. Terrific actor in other things as well. So here we got a couple of sports birthdays. I love this one. Spud Webb is 56 today.
Get up, Spud Webb.
5'7" and won the 1986 slam dunk championship. I saw it on TV because I'm older than you, Chris. But I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Everybody knew he could dunk. He'd been in the league. It wasn't a secret. But he's in there like with, I'd have to look
at Dominique Wilkins.
Dominique Wilkins and probably Jordan if he was in that year. Because Jordan used to do it.
Yeah, he was consistent. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and here's Spud Webb, 5'7". He probably got some bonus points for that. But he was legit. I mean, the dunks he was pulling off were legit. Spud Webb, fun player. Kind of opened the door for Muggsy Bogues to get into the NBA. Muggsy might have been 5'6".
I think Muggsy was like 5'3".
5'3"?
Yes, wow. He was very short.
He played
he
for
was
a
shorter
while,
than Spud Webb.
Like, but he played for a while.
Yeah, he was in the league for a long time. Muggsy was definitely, I think, shorter than Spud Webb.
Yep. And the last birthday today, at least on my list, Michael Spinks, 63, former boxing champion. He held the championships in two different weight classes. But if you didn't see him in the early part of his career when he was winning championships and you only saw him at the end, what he'll be remembered for is the Mike Tyson fight. Mike Tyson knocked him out in 91 seconds. And that was the end of Michael Spinks' career. He's a great fighter, but it's unfortunate that that's what some people will remember him for. That was one fight in 91 seconds out of all the championship belts that he held over the years. Michael Spinks turns 63 today. Also, 30 years ago today, Milli Vanilli released Blame It on the Rain. Later discovered that the band didn't actually sing their own songs. It was all lip-syncing. It happened while they were on stage. The
boo.
Yeah. Well, whatever device they had, I don't know if it was a CD player or some kind of machine that pumped out the music backstage. They're out there lip-syncing, and then all of a sudden it started to skip or had a glitch in it. And so the two guys who made up Milli Vanilli, at least the face of Milli Vanilli, didn't know what to do, and they ran off the stage. And then eventually one of them ended up taking his own life. Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess I should have timed that better. I didn't know you were going to do that.
No, I didn't know you were going to go there.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry about that.
That was not intentional.
I was trying to find it for the when you were talking actually about
when they got caught.
Or no, just like, yeah, when they caught lip syncing.
Yeah,
that's what I meant. I didn't mean to press that.
Yeah, they got caught lip syncing. That was Chris and I did not coordinate on what I was going to say, and that was not his fault, so don't get upset. But Milli Vanilli, still decent music to listen to, I guess, for that day and age. Also, July 13th, 1985, final notes, Live Aid was held at two stadiums, Wembley Stadium in London and the stadium in Philadelphia. And, of course, if you saw the movie Bohemian Rhapsody, that's you saw that towards the end. It was Queen and Freddie Mercury who stole the show. And I saw a little bit of a documentary about Live Aid and how it got put together and those sorts of things. And they interviewed several of the artists in the band. I mean, every band in the world that was big at the time was there. U2 was there. Sting and the Police were there. Anybody you could think of name value in the music business was performing during Live Aid. And when they were doing the documentary, they interviewed one of the other artists. I can't remember who it was. And so Queen goes out there, and they're blowing the roof off Wembley. It's unbelievable. If you've only seen the movie Bohemian Rhapsody and have not gone to like YouTube to see Live Aid and Queen's performance, you should do that. One of the bands sitting in the green room while Queen was performing said, "Oh, crap. There's no way anybody here is topping that. We might as well just go home." But they were raising money. So that was July 13th, 1985. We'll take a quick timeout and then wrap things up. You are listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bollig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. One of the great talking head songs of all time. Love it. I could just let this roll for a few seconds. You may find yourself living in a shotgun shack. Just awesome. Good stuff. Back here for the final couple of minutes here. Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. As things heat up in the Kansas City metro area and across the Midwest, it's going to be a steamy, hot day today, as usual. It's going to be humid. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bollig is running the show. Let's set you up for our show tomorrow, as we'll be back from 9 to noon for Sports Sunday. We'll speak with Eric Horn from the Daily Oklahoman about the Oklahoma City Thunder. Nobody's left to turn out the lights. What do they got? Steven Adams, and that's about the only guy I know still on the roster. What are they, 5 years away from ever being competitive again? I don't know. Things can change in the NBA. But that franchise is going to have some tough times for the next few years. So Eric Horn from the Daily Oklahoman will join us. Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, will join us. We'll talk about many things with the college football season right around the corner. We got media days coming up for the Big 12 and the SEC. Dennis has also written a lot lately about athletes being able to use their image, name, and likeness to make money. And Dennis is always thoughtful when he writes stuff about that stuff. So Dennis Dodd tomorrow.
He also has a good article out about coaches on the hot seat.
Coaches on the
hot
seat.
He went through a ton of, I don't know if it was every FBS school, but it was
a lot.
Extensive.
A lot. So Dennis Dodd tomorrow. And then we'll also have, I don't know if I've ever had this person on as a guest before. I've done his show before. I've been on with him before. But for the first time, Soren Petro is going to be my guest, our guest.
Yeah, we're going to talk about his about the transition starting Monday to the draft time slot. So that'll be good stuff.
2 to 6 p.m. and that'll be a big change for Soren because he's been doing 10 to 2 for 15 years now. Curtis Siebold's been there. Jed Marshall joined the program here a couple of months ago, three or four months ago. So a little bit of a change in schedule. Got to make the adjustment. So we'll talk to Soren Petro about that and what he's looking forward to most about that move from 2 to 6. So it'll be Soren, Curtis, and Jed. And that'll start Monday. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks to our guest, Seth Kaiser from The Athletic, talking Chiefs football. Max Reaper from Royals Review, talking Bubba Starling and the Royals in the second half, possible trades. And Matt Galloway from CJOnline.com. and HawkZone.com. You can get all those on the podcast page at 810WHB.com. My name is Brad Porter. Thank you for joining us today. Chris Bohlig has been running the show. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday. We'll see you back here at 9 a.m. for Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We pay the price.